Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning, everyone. What are we supposed to believe here? Is 30,000 a magic number or something?
You mean the surge in Afghanistan?
Right, right. I mean, 30,000, that's it? I mean, how long were the Soviets in Afghanistan with a kind of a scorched earth quality?
Too long,
yeah,
I think, is the answer.
And you go back to Alexander the Great. Well, today, the last of the Afghanistan surgers ships out for Afghanistan, beginning what the Obama administration hopes is the last act in America's longest war, as you pointed out.
Right.
And certainly one of the most frustrating battlegrounds in all of world history.
I'm glad to be part of it. I want to be part of it. It's going to be historical, you know?
Do you think you can win?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, I don't really know too much about the situation. So I just got in the army. But, well, the Russians couldn't do it years ago, you know? They're going to fight until they can't anymore.
Hey, I've got a little advice for you, Private Anthony Coscarella, who spoke to a reporter for the BBC. Don't think about Russia on your way over to Afghanistan. He's one of the troops from the 101st Airborne Division's 4th Brigade Combat Team. They leave today for Afghanistan from Fort Campbell in Kentucky, and they will bring the surge to its peak. What is the mission? What does the surge accomplish? And what is the evidence on the ground of the larger U.S. presence in Afghanistan? Spencer Ackerman joins us, senior reporter for Wired's Danger Room blog. He's on the line from Washington, D.C., but he's just returned from Afghanistan. Good morning, Spencer.
Good morning.
So do you get a sense that the surge is almost complete, that we're on the edge of some huge tipping point, or at least some milestone for the mission over there?
I got a sense that there's a great amount of anticipation about what comes next. I had a chance to interview General Petraeus while I was over there, and I heard a lot of comments similar to what you heard in Iraq in 2007 around the summer after the surge had completed there, that now, as he put it, the inputs are all in, and so we're waiting on results. The surreal part of that, of course, is that we've been at war in Afghanistan for 10 years, and you would have hoped that there were greater results that would already be on display.
Yeah, you know, we played that tape from the individual speaking to the BBC, Anthony Coscarella, who's shipping out for Afghanistan. You wouldn't expect that a private would know much about what the mission is. But did you get a sense of what the 101st Airborne, which has suffered, we should note, more than 40 casualties recently in Afghanistan, what they're going to be doing?
I did. I had a chance to interview General John Campbell, who's the 101st commander and the overall commander in charge of eastern Afghanistan. And you may remember that before General McChrystal was put in charge of the Afghanistan war, the east, the very mountainous region abutting the border with Pakistan, was the major front in the war for about 8 years. And General McChrystal and now General Petraeus have made the south, where Kandahar is, where Helmand Province is, the historic heartland of the Taliban, the major effort. And that's left a big question about what's going on in the East. What are we really doing there? General Campbell has figured out, or hopes he's figured out, a strategy to ensure that you can perform counterinsurgency operations in a place where there aren't a lot of population clusters, which is usually a prerequisite for a successful counterinsurgency. If you're going to protect people, you have to have them in a really population-dense area so you can provide that protection. General Campbell wants to focus on really three main access roads. One is Highway 1, which goes from Kabul east to the Torkham Gate border of Pakistan, which is a huge economic crossing,
right.
One that goes south, Highway 1, that'll go down to Kandahar, and one that comes up through Khost Pakhti and Paktika provinces. All three of those are major infiltration routes for insurgent fighters, for money, and for weapons. General Campbell wants the 101st and the private that you guys interviewed to start focusing on district centers where there's some locus of provincial government,
right.
Where there are markets, where it's relatively dense. Basically take and hold those centers and along with Afghan security forces kind of push security out along those lines. So over the course of the next 10 months, along those routes, you should start seeing those district centers, the focus of really heavy fighting by the United States.
Right. Well, I mean, that's that's a great sort of tactical briefing on what's going to happen in the early going for the 101st Airborne and largely for the other troops that are there. And we would expect that from you, Spencer Ackerman, senior reporter for Danger Room blog for Wired.com. But let's get a sense from you what the consensus on the part of the generals is of ultimately what the victory is going to be, and that is turning this all over to the Afghans. Here's Major Brad Schultz talking to the BBC, one of the troops that's involved in the final sort of deployment of the surge.
Yeah, I've been in Afghanistan multiple times, working with the Afghan National Army and partnering with the government. It's the competence of their Afghan army is impressive. They've been fighting for years, and they're competent. And you can sit down in a joint planning session with them, and you speak the same military language, sort of. It's like a band of warriors getting together, the police force, the Afghan army.
Spencer Ackerman, do you get a sense that the people on the ground feel that way about the Afghan National Police Force, the Afghan army?
The army certainly a lot more than the police. The police is really filled with corruption from top to bottom. The army has a number of problems, including its performance, its logistics, and its lack of a non-commissioned officer corps that can enforce discipline. But at least, what I've heard is that they're better than the Iraqi army was at this stage in their development. There's a tremendous amount of illiteracy in the Afghan army. Part of the problem with Afghanistan's 80% illiteracy rate is a lot of that is located in precisely the generation that we're training
right.
in the Iraqi army and police. But generally, I've heard problems with capabilities in the Afghan army rather than problems of will to fight,
right.
which is a lot more that I've heard in the police.
Spencer, a minute to go here, but this is a pretty important question. What evidence did you get of a sense of circumspectness, maybe a lack of candor, a worry about reporters being in your midst, given the McChrystal experience earlier this summer? And are the generals worried about this 2011 withdrawal that Obama is insisting on, and even some generals have said gives sustenance to the Afghan Taliban forces?
They tended to express a lot more confidence about what they can do before 2011 and caution about overestimating the impact that 2011 will have.
And what about, the concerns about having reporters hanging around? I imagine you weren't, like, hanging out with them, talking video games with the generals, right?
No, we didn't really talk about playing Halo, but there was a lot more jokes about the Rolling Stone story than there was, stern-faced
really?
Expressions of disapproval.
Interesting. Spencer Ackerman, senior reporter for Wired's Danger Room blog, assessing the surge now complete when the 101st Airborne ships out. Magic number, 30,000 troops? We'll find out. Thanks, Spencer.
Thank you.